Hi, I'm Tedra Meyer, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Before we get into today's show on literacy, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of Ken Squire of Waterbury. He died yesterday at the age of 88. Squire was a legendary sportscaster and radio personality. Among his many, many varied accomplishments was founding the Radio Vermont Group and Thunder Road in Barrie. As Governor Phil Scott said in a statement, he had a deep devotion to his community, which was the entire state. You can find an obituary for Ken Squire on vermontpublic.org, where you can hear remembrances from some of the people who loved him best. Okay, now on to the topic at hand, literacy in Vermont. Vermont's public education system has a lot going for it, and it spends more per pupil than almost every other state. But test scores here in literacy are steadily declining. In 2002, 39% of fourth graders could read at a proficient or advanced level. 2 decades later, that number was down to 32%. That means fewer than a third of Vermont fourth graders are where they should be with reading. That's according to federal data. So today on the show, we are going to look into why literacy rates are dropping and what people in Vermont are doing to support kids in reading. Later in the show, we'll check in with a program director from the Children's Literacy Foundation, which focuses on kids in Vermont and New Hampshire. But first, joining us from a local school is Nan Johnson. She's a first grade teacher at JFK Elementary School in Winooski. Nan, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thank you.
And thank you so much for taking some time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day with kids to talk with us. Nan, first, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been teaching in Winooski?
I've been teaching in Winooski 27 years.
27 years. That's amazing. How has your classroom evolved over that time?
My gosh, it's changed so much. I mean, when I first started, I don't even remember if we had a computer when I first started, and now all the kids have iPads. So there's been a lot of changes that we've gone through over the last, 27 years, but it's been a lot of fun. And what has stayed the same is the kids are so hardworking and the staff.
Well, we're talking today specifically about children's literacy. What do we mean when we talk about literacy? That word can have kind of lots of subtext.
Yeah, there's a lot to literacy. Overall in literacy, you can think of oral language and written language. So it's speaking and listening and writing and reading. All those pieces go together to help students build their literacy knowledge.
And what I have learned in preparing for this conversation is that there are kind of these two main approaches to teaching kids to read. And jump in and correct me here if I'm summing this up wrong. But essentially, in one of them, teachers lean pretty heavily on phonics. So that's like the sounds within spoken words. And they talk about how those connect to written words. And then in the other approach, which is called balanced literacy, there's a little bit less emphasis on sounding out words and more on comprehension skills and engaging with books, things like that. And the emphasis over the last couple decades has shifted from the first method towards the latter, with some consequences that not everybody is in support of. From your seat as a teacher, how have you seen that shift?
I have seen a shift from when I first started. There was a lot of the phonics that you mentioned, then moving towards balanced, and now we're going back towards phonics, which is referred to as the science of reading, which is based on all of the science of reading research.
And why that shift?
Because kids really do need to learn how to sound out words. And I think if that gets dropped from the teaching, it can really be tough for kids. And it doesn't mean that they're not exposed to great literature. As a literacy teacher, we need to include all of those components. So we do phonological awareness, which is listening to the sounds within a word and not looking at the letters, looking at the decoding, which is like the more basic phonics piece that people are aware of. We do comprehension, fluency, background knowledge. All of that goes together to help kids learn how to read.
Mm. So in a recent reporting from 7 Days, there was a section in this great article by Allison Novak about children's literacy, and it talked about Winooski specifically, how balanced literacy has kind of been the dominant method there and in other places. But the current curriculum director for Winooski Public Schools and others have been shifting the district's approach. And when you hear it like that, it can sound a little like abstract, maybe top down. And you're somebody who's like in the classroom working with kids every single day. So when we hear a statement like, you know, the district is shifting its approach, what does that mean for a teacher like you and for students?
Well, it feels really good for me because I really like the science of reading. Yeah. I really believe in teaching reading this way. And what's really good when it's coming from our director of curriculum, it means everybody's on the same page. So one classroom isn't doing this approach and a different classroom doing a different approach. It's really important that as literacy teachers, we all understand what we're doing and we're using the same language, because you don't want something to be taught in one classroom and then they go to another room and they're like, oh, what's this person talking about? So it really is helpful when a whole school or a whole district is using the same approach.
Mm. Well, I want to play a clip here from an episode of Vermont Public's podcast for Kids But Why. They did a whole episode about learning to read based on a listener's question, a child's question. And the host, Jane Lindholm, spoke to a medical doctor and professor named Fumiko Haft about how the auditory and the visual parts of the brain have to work together for a kid to learn to read. So let's take a listen.
Thinking of it like a conductor is probably easier. Like the conductor of an orchestra who stands in front of all the musicians and helps make sure they're all playing the right thing at the right time at the right pace.
And so it could be something like the hearing part or the listening speech part of the brain, and then more of the visual part of the brain related to seeing things, but it's not just purely seeing things black and white, but it's more about seeing objects. So what, you don't see cars as just a tire and windows and those things. You see it as a car. You see faces as a face. And for the same reason, you start seeing words as you're learning to read. And so this visual part is very important. So when you're starting to learn to read, then this conductor will stand up and say, now we're going to start learning to read. And so we need the auditory part of your brain, the visual part of your brain, and your learning part of the brain or the attention part of the brain. And all these pieces need to work together. And so that's how you start kind of conducting in your brain and moving together. When they move together and fire together, then they wire together. And that's how you learn to read.
I love that metaphor of a conductor in the brain. Nan Johnson, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, first of all, learning to read is so exciting. And I did like that description of it, because it's so amazing, all that stuff that we're doing in our brains to read. It's so cool. And what she was referring to is something I mentioned earlier, the phonological awareness piece, which is the auditory piece. So before a child can learn how to read, they need to know the difference between words and sounds. So a child has to be, if I say, I went to the store, the child needs to be able to know how many words are in that sentence. You can't read it or write it until you know, oh, this is how many words there are. And then you need to break it down further. Well, how many sounds are in the word went? You need to be able to isolate and break down each of those sounds. So all that has to happen before a child's able to learn start the visual piece, which I think most people think of as learning to read, like looking at a word. sounding it out and being able to say it. Mm-hmm. But there's so much other stuff that's happening in the background, I guess, like the, that the conductor is doing before a child can learn how to read.
Mm. Now I'm here in the studio trying to figure out how many sounds are the word went. More than I think I thought. Well, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Nan Johnson. She's a first grade teacher at JFK Elementary School in Winooski with 27 years of experience under her belt. We're talking about children's literacy. And if you have questions for Nan, or if you have helped a child learn to read, give us a call, 800-639-2211. This topic is more important than ever as we are seeing literacy rates decline in our state and across the country. Now, Nan, we got a question from a listener named Mac in Callis. And Mac asks us, what have Vermont's educational leaders done in the last couple of years to be sure that all teachers are equipped with the necessary skills to successfully support struggling readers? So, Nan, for you, do you feel like you are getting the guidance and the support that you need to help kids learn to read? And that could be either at the school level or, you know, more broadly, like at the agency of education level.
I think I can only talk about my school level. Our school has a coaching model to it. So we have a literacy coach and a math coach. So when we have questions or we want a little more help diving into maybe looking at the results of an assessment or figure out what are some good next steps, we have an expert within our school that we can go to help puzzle stuff out. And I also work on a team with some phenomenal teachers, and we spend all of our prep times together. And we have a multilingual teacher on our team. We have a special educator on our team where we can work together to figure out next moves and best practices. So I feel like within our school district, we have a lot of support. And I also look for a lot of, I like to take trainings. Our school provides trainings. So I continue my education that way.
Mm. And we also reached out to our audience on Instagram ahead of today's show and presented them with this topic. And we got a question from somebody on Instagram asking if Vermont teachers feel prepared to teach dyslexic kids. So, Nan, is that something that you have had to develop special training in, or are there paraeducators who can work with kids with dyslexia?
I think helping any child learn how to read is what we are working towards. So I feel like I don't know what's coming out now as teachers who are newly trained. I can't speak to that, but I know for myself, I just look at every child and what their needs are and what their strengths are. I do assessments with children to figure out, oh, you know this, this is where you are, I can build on that. And I feel like most teachers, at least in our school district, that's how we approach teaching how to read. We look at every child and try to meet all of their needs using the knowledge and training that we've had.
Mm. And when it comes to students who are learning English as a second language, as I know many students in the Winooski School District are, how do you help them specifically to prevent them from falling behind?
I am so fortunate. I co-teach with Erin Hurley, who is one of our multilingual teachers in the school. And so she co-teaches literacy with me every day for an hour. And we pull in other students who are learning English into my classroom. And she brings her expertise and I get to learn from her, and I bring my expertise and she learns from me. And together we can support those kids. We also have a tremendous staff where we are just always working hard to support kids. We've had so many kids learning English over the years that our staff just kind of works seamlessly together. We have a literacy interventionist who works with kids. We have two different multilingual teachers that support first grade. We share them. We share those teachers with kindergarten and second grade. That's why we have two different ones. And we have instructional assistants working in the grade too. So we just look to see what each child's needs are and how we can group kids to provide them the most support, but grouping kids together that makes sense. Like, these kids are working on phonological awareness. These kids are working on short vowels. These kids are working on writing complete sentences. So, and we're constantly moving things around. Kids aren't stuck in one group. We're constantly like, oh, I'm going to pull this group today. I'm going to pull this other kid in, so that we're making sure we're meeting all kids' needs.
Hmm. So, Nan, the question I keep coming back to, you know, hearing you describe your work with such obvious passion for literacy and teaching kids to read, such passion for your students and the school district. Within all that is still this this troubling statistic about declining literacy rates. There are so many teachers out there like you who are working so hard every day to support students. You have so much experience. What do you attribute these declines to? You know, if not, you know, there's no lack of impassioned teachers and motivated students.
Yeah, I don't know, because I only really know what's going on in my classroom. That's what I can control. I do know when my kids come in, I've been the last few years, I've had like maybe a certain number of kids below grade level, but I've been able to have almost everybody on by the end of the school year. So it's a lot of really hard work. I do know those couple of years of COVID, when you know our whole way of teaching was disrupted. And even when we were back in school, we were still 6 feet apart wearing masks. Like, you couldn't even have a normal read aloud time, which that read aloud time is so important for kids to build their love of literacy. It's not as fun to read a book from, you know, 6 feet away from kids. So I don't know if that has impacted as the older kids, you know, are getting tested, but we're seeing a lot of growth. I know in our first grade last year and already this year too, we were just saying, wow, the kids have grown so much this year. And I actually have parent teacher conferences starting in just a few minutes. And I just can't wait to talk to those parents and show them, this is where your child was at the beginning, and look how hard they have worked and look where they are now. And the kids are really excited for me to share their work with them too.
Oh, well, we will let you get to those parent teacher conferences. Nan Johnson with Winooski Public Schools and JFK Elementary, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much.
The Children's Literacy Foundation works to inspire kids in Vermont and New Hampshire to love reading and writing, especially in under-resourced communities. According to the foundation, more than two-thirds of fourth graders from low-income families struggle with reading. Joining us now is Jana Brown, the foundation's program manager. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here, Michaela. Happy to be here.
And let's kick off with a little bit more about your organization. Better you than me describe it. Tell us a little bit about what the Children's Literacy Foundation does.
Well, I think you've captured our mission statement perfectly. Our mission is to inspire a love of reading and writing among kids in Vermont and New Hampshire, particularly under-resourced programs and communities. And our age focus is on kids from birth to age 12, although we do often work with some older children in specific grant programs that we run. But we're really focused on that birth up to sixth grade. Building literacy skills in that age cohort.
And I know you were listening to the first segment that we just did with Nan Johnson, a teacher in Winooski Public Schools. I'm curious, as somebody who works in this somewhat the same area as Nan, but from a very different angle, what your thoughts were listening to her speak about teaching kids to read?
Yeah, I was so excited to hear what Nan had to say. And Cliff has actually had a long relationship with the JFK Elementary School. We've done numerous partnerships with them over the years. Looking at the list of our grant programs, I think we've done nearly every one of our grants in that community. So it was really great to hear from her. And as someone who's been there 27 years, I'm sure she's experienced CLIF programming in person. So that's great. Such a wonderful school, a wonderful community there. And I think, you know, what she's saying, the perspective on the ground in the classroom is really helpful. We're always looking at CLIF to inform our work by the practices that are happening in the classroom, the feedback that we're getting from teachers and educators, and specifically folks who specialize in literacy instruction. What are they seeing in the classroom? What are the needs of their students? How can CLIF adapt our program to make sure we're providing resources that are really helping everyone move forward in terms of literacy attainment and engagement? Mm.
And speaking of adapting your program, we've cited a couple of statistics in this hour about declining literacy rates, not just in Vermont, but in many other states around the country. When you and your colleagues see data like that come out, are there ways in which you think about your programming and potentially ways to adapt it to try to help address some of the concerns that we're seeing?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Nan made a really great point about all the disruptions to the education system in the last several years. It's been really challenging for our partners. So I think now more than ever, it's really important for CLIF to be, you know, responsive to their needs and really listening to them in terms of what's helping move them forward. Certainly there was a lot of undelivered learning during the school closures. But the silver lining to all that is I think there's really a great renewed focus on literacy, you know, have best instructional approaches. And really at CLIF, we're all about, you know, encouraging kids to really love and engage with books and with reading and writing. And so we're always, looking for ways to meet kids where they are in terms of exciting materials. One of the really important things that we focus on at CLIF is book choice. So we allow kids to select books to take home from, you know, hundreds of books that we bring to an event. So everyone can find a book that's a great fit for their reading level, for their interest. So I think that choice piece of it is a really important part of the work that we're doing.
Well, I would love to hear more about some of the specific programs that CLIF does. But first, let's pull in some callers. We have Cindy in Calais first. Cindy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that I think it's great you're bringing this topic to the forefront on the radio here. Recently, you ran a program called Reveal that had a lot about this, and I'm going to send you a link to that so you can bring that back up for people to listen to. I also wanted to say that when you were talking about the science of reading, that sometimes science of reading gets a bad rap because people think, oh, they just are drilling kill on phonics, and that is so not true. I came from a background of teaching as a balanced literacy teacher and found that I wasn't really teaching my children very well how to read, so I was able to get a master's degree and learn more about how to teach reading. And for a program to be effective, it needs to be sequential and direct. Explain it to the children. Don't make them guess what they're seeing. Don't rely on the pictures. The best books don't have pictures in them for the instructional books about reading. Of course, picture books are great to read to kids, and they help their you know, language development in general and are really important. But for teaching to read, you want people to look at the letters. And somebody asked that good question of how many sounds are in the word went, and I don't know if any of your listeners are still puzzling on that.
I am.
But went has four sounds, and chat has three sounds, although when you spell the word chat, like the chat on the radio here, it has three sounds, but it has four letters. So kids need to be taught that directly so that they can learn how to spell and read those words.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for sharing your expertise here. I'm going to jump in just because we have a couple other callers on the line. But thank you so much for telling me how many sounds are in WEND because I have been here thinking about it. Ollie in White River Junction is next. Ollie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. So I'm a cartoonist studying graphic novels with a specific focus in middle grade graphic novels. And something that I love about what I do is that graphic novels and comics can pull in reluctant readers and help with literacy. And I was really curious if anybody had anything to talk about with regards to how comics and graphic novels can play a role in the classroom and the library spaces.
Oh, that's a great question. Ollie, are you with the Center for Cartoon Studies in White River?
I sure am, yeah.
Great. Well, yes, so to our guest, Janet Brown, what do you think of handing out graphic novels as a way to bring in kids into reading?
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of our most requested and frequently chosen genre of book that we give away at Cliff. Graphic novels have just hugely high interest to kids across all age spans, from, you know, early readers all the way up through teenagers. I think it's just such an exciting way to get kids to engage with books. And we've had some partnerships over the years with the Center for Cartoon Studies, so I'm so glad that Ollie called in. And actually, this gives me a great opportunity to do a plug for a partnership that we have with the Fletcher Free Library. They are hosting a nonfiction comic festival over the weekend. Really encourage folks to go to their website and check that out. And one of our Cliff cartoon artists, Merrick Bennett from New Hampshire, is going to be there doing some workshops and showcasing his work. And as part of a sponsorship with Cliff, he is doing some cartooning workshops for some middle grade students at Edmonds tomorrow. So just a really great example of how Cliff is trying to do work in this genre, because it does drive a ton of excitement.
Hmm. And Fletcher Free Library in Burlington, yes. Edmonds also.
Yes.
In Burlington as
Thank
well.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We have a call from Gil over in New Hampshire. Gil, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
I had a little boy, about 8 years old, who told me there was no reason to read. Absolutely none. And he had all sorts of ways of telling me that that was true. Well, I got into him through my own workshop stuff. Like right now, I'm reading a Haynes Owner's Workshop Manual of the Milky Way. And I found that if you use the picture books, and I am waiting so fervently for the new one from the Webb Telescope. Oh, the pictures I've seen so far have just been stupendous. But if you show a kid a book of the Milky Way and all the pictures, you know, the suns and the stars and the different parts of it. I bought him one, too, while I did it. You get them into something like the whole universe.
Gil, what I'm hearing from you is that tailoring the book to the children's specific interest is really key when you're trying to get a kid into reading. And I'm curious to hear from you, Jana, how your organization tries to do that. You know, when you're handing out free books, say, I know you do a lot of work trying to get books to children of incarcerated parents. Mm-hmm. How do you then tailor those books to a kid's specific needs? Are you able to do that?
So I think our goal at Cliff is to have a really wide variety of books on a huge range of topics and in a variety of formats, whether it's picture books or board books for, you know, the pre-K set, you know, all the way up to graphic novels for teenage readers. We really sort of cover the whole spectrum. I like to tell folks that we essentially run a mini bookstore at our office in Waterbury Center. So at any given time, we have about 10,000 to 12,000 books in our giveaway book library, you know, hundreds of different titles that, you know, that we keep current, that are curated with input from our literacy experts that we work with, just to make sure that we have a great mix of diverse books and books across all different topic areas, you know, fiction, nonfiction, because we really have found that giving kids choice over what they want to read significantly drives engagement with reading when you're finding the book that's just right for you. And I think, as this most recent caller made a great point, you know, there's a book for every reader. It's just a matter of matching kids with that book.
Mm. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Gil, and for helping a kid learn how to read and get excited about it. Let's go next to Betty in Littletown. Betty, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a retired special ed teacher for high school and a regular ed teacher for fifth grade. I have a dual degree in psychology and special education. And I have a question. I think this organization, both of them, sound wonderful. And I know that kids are motivated to read things they're interested in. You know, if somebody likes, remote control cars, mm-hmm. They would like a book about remote control cars. It's a very specific thing. and you can locate books like that. My question is, the state of Vermont is one of three states in the union that does not do testing for dyslexia, which is a learning disability. It's a very real disability, and the children cannot read without special help. Hawaii, Vermont, and Iowa are the only three states that do not test for dyslexia. So apparently the parents have to spend money on having their child not only tested, but have special education. I understand how to teach reading, and I've read books about it, and I know about what a puzzle it is for all children. But for a dyslexic child that may even have ADHD, it's nearly impossible to stay up with the class. I wondered if you had any advice about that, or could help with any information about dyslexia. Yeah.
Well, thanks for your call, Betty. And I know we've gotten actually a number of other callers with questions about dyslexia, which is signaling to me that we need to do even more programming here on Vermont Edition about this condition and ways that the state and educators and parents can support kids with dyslexia. Not to put you on the spot here, Jan, I know you're focused on literacy most broadly, but I am curious if this conversation comes up about maybe specific books that your organization can share with children with dyslexia.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago about just matching the right book, the right type of book with each individual reader, because the challenges that kids face in building their literacy skills are pretty diverse. So dyslexia is certainly a really significant challenge and, you know, requires sort of special attention and education around literacy for those students. So essentially at CLIF, our mission is really just to provide a responsive support for the teachers in the schools that we're working with. So certainly if a teacher or a reading interventionist came to us, you know, with a specific need to help a particular group of students, we would do our best to meet that. Mm.
Let's take one more call here. We have Mike in Johnson, who's been waiting patiently. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I've struggled with mild dyslexia all my life. My sister's had it even worse. A couple of years ago, while I was starting work on a master's degree, I came across some assigned reading that had a slightly different font. And this was the first time I've ever been able to read anything without running my finger along the lines or using a ruler or anything else to keep me focused on a specific line of print. And I came to the conclusion that this was probably a dyslexic font. And I have since researched. I have Open Dyslexic on my computer, both of the writing programs I have. It was just an easy read for me. I read the comments as I was preparing to download the Open Dyslexic, naysayers saying, well, it's totally ineffective. But I can tell you that for this guy, it worked.
Oh, well, I'm so glad to hear, Mike, that was helpful for you. And again, I think there's so much interest in this topic of dyslexia and reading that we'll have to return to it here on Vermont Edition. Jana, we have just a couple minutes left. I want to make sure that we're able to highlight some of the upcoming programming that CLIF is bringing on pretty soon. I know you've mentioned a event at Fletcher Free Library in Burlington, but what are some other programs that you think folks should be aware of?
Yeah, so CLIF runs 8 different grant programs, and they're all sort of uniquely targeted to different types of organizations. So we run a year-long program working with schools in Vermont and New Hampshire called the Year of the Book program, and that's a very intensive year-long grant where we're working with school communities to bring authors and poets and writing workshops to kids in the schools that we're partnering with, as well as a really robust program of book giveaways and all sorts of flexible and creative literacy support. So one of our favorite pieces of those grants are working with our school partners to figure out how we can fund really enriching literacy experiences. One great example from a recent partner is they had a reading marathon, reading challenge, and upon completion, the school community visited the Cog Railway in New Hampshire, and one of our Cliff presenters, Eric Pinder, who's written a book about Mount Washington and the cats on Mount Washington, was able to meet the group up there and give them a presentation. So that's just sort of one example of the experiences that we're funding for our school partners and sort of working to creatively engage kids with reading and writing. But we also work with rural public libraries. You mentioned earlier we run a program working with children of incarcerated adults. So that program is operating in both Vermont and New Hampshire, where we are going into correctional facilities and talking with incarcerated parents and sending books home to their kids and really sharing some strategies around sharing books successfully with kids. And then I also help manage our summer reading program, which is a really widespread program across both Vermont and New Hampshire, where we're serving 8,000 to 9,000 kids every summer with literacy visits by storytellers and authors and also book giveaways. So really what I'll say to sort of really sum up Cliff's programming is book giveaways are a huge piece of the work that we do, but we always combine that with an interactive and engaging literacy experience with a live storytelling presentation. So I think we've found that, you know, bringing together book choice and that in-person literacy experience is really powerful for the kids and families that we're serving.
Mm. Well, you have me wanting to rush off air and go read my book, which I'm almost done with right now. So whatever you're doing is working.
Great.
Jana Brown from the Children's Literacy Foundation, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.